Eugene here from a cafe in the old quarter of Hanoi, Vietnam, for the agency.
Hi, Eugene. This is Candy Minx in Chicago.
Candy.
Hey, I'm having a Hendrix gin and tonic. I've had a long, crazy day, maybe a crazy weekend, and it's just good to hear your voice and sit still for a bit.
It's good to hear your voice, too. It's morning here. It's mid-morning.
Oh, so weird.
I was up very early. And I walked down the street, remembering there was a French bakery just around the corner. And at 7:30 this morning, it was open. I got myself the most amazing, super fresh Danish pastry. Oh, my God.
Isn't that great? It's so great you didn't have to go all the way to France to get a pastry.
Oh, well, there's a big French influence here because, of course, this was the capital of French Indochina when those nasty French colonized Vietnam. Mm-hmm. So there still remains a lot of French influence, and there's a number of great bakeries in town. So I grabbed this pastry, and I brought it over to a little hole-in-the-wall cafe and ordered up some rocket fuel. Man, what a great breakfast.
Good for you. I wanted to do a quick, it's not really a fix-it, but I don't think we said what postmodernism was, in case we need to explain that to anybody that was listening to the last episode, because we went on to our crazy postmodernist tangent there.
And why don't we do a 10-episode series defining it?
And talk about it. Yeah, that's right. Well, I just want to say quickly that it's kind of suspicious of any theory or approach to anything. That's my summation of it. It's just general distrust of anything being of meaningfulness, but different than existentialism.
Of course, you could say that since the word modern really means right now, and right now referred to the early 20th century, postmodernism must mean after now.
I guess that's
true. Or later.
That could certainly work too. And also, I don't believe in postmodernism because lots of books and plays like Shakespeare, he had all kinds of self-referential analyzing his art, plays within plays. So I think it's kind of a bullshit thing anyway, always did. Just wanted to throw that out there. What else is happening? You know, we've got some email.
Oh, tell me about the email.
I will. Let's read that first. And it's called, you're going to love this, Wages of Fear. And it's from Dave. He said, I had to write to you on this one. I watched Wages of Fear in Carmel, California with our friends at the Monarch Inn in 1993. Watching this film made all of us decide to go to Honduras, where the movie takes place, not in South America. Taking place in Honduras is important as it is the true banana republic. Even when we visited, it was apparent that this was failed state filled with the same gun runners, CIA hacks, and desperados, where people still face the same dilemma. The cast of characters are the detritus of a world destroyed by the Second World War and facing the dilemma of the modern world, a place of desperation and despicable choices that need to be made for survival. Think Camus. Is this like Cormac McCarthy? Oh, and by the way, yes, this is how we pick our vacation spots. So thank you. Isn't that cute?
Excellent. Thank you, David. Glad to hear from you. Glad to know you're still out there listening.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. We really appreciate it. And we love to have the email. And I think that I didn't know it was Honduras.
No, I thought it was South America as well.
Yeah. But was it South America or was it using Honduras to be South America? Maybe it was always Honduras.
I don't know. I'm going to trust that Dave's right on this.
Yeah, and I'm terrible at geography, so what do I know?
Hey, so tell me about your crazy couple of days.
Oh, God, it's up and down. Crazy. Stag has been working mega crazy shifts till like 5 in the morning at Hard Rock. with the love and basketball. We've got Valentine's Day, and then the NBA All-Stars were in Chicago. And then I did all kinds of shopping and organization and packing, because tonight, before I called you, I loaded up some of the stuff in the car tonight because we're going to leave tomorrow. So I did a little pre-packing of the car with all of Stag's artwork that we're taking to the conference. And then this morning, then I had girlfriends over last night, Monica and Sarana. So we had a great conversation around the table in the front room, and cheese and crackers and wine and Chianti and beer. And then today I went to the temple and we had a massive, massive meeting. This meeting brought in everything that's ever happened since summer of 2018, when the scandal at the temple first began. We had a big, important person from Los Angeles and from kind of the overview of Buddhist temples. And they ran us through what it takes to be a minister, and that role is up to the resident minister to pick a new training students and for anyone for ordination. It was just really, really fascinating, really interesting. And I'm totally exhausted from it.
Was it positive?
The first, yes, it was positive. Basically, it was very interesting because there were a number of people who did not believe that the leadership was doted on by our reverend. Okay, that's come out, and they've been gaslighting. A few people have been gaslighting those of us that have been saying there's some kind of disrespect to leadership here. It turned out today, at one point, one woman stood up with the mic and said, "Oh, there's no leadership at this temple." And we're like, what the hell? What do you call a resident minister? So at least it was out in the open, and I don't feel gaslighted anymore. I don't feel like I was going crazy. One person finally admitted to having a kind of confluence, or, you know, the thing is, you don't have to be against somebody, but when you don't respect their position or their role or play along with it, you are sort of sabotaging that. Whether you mean to or not, it is a form of sabotage, because it's unconscious and you're being negative. Anytime that person's name is mentioned, you've got your negative energy or attitude towards it.
Well, yes, and you can become very passive aggressive.
Yes. Mm-hmm. And the first hour, you know, in a really sick way, I guess I felt a sort of satisfaction, not my finest hour, but I felt a satisfaction for exactly what we said was the problem was being addressed by, you know, really the structure of Buddhism. And so it was kind of reassuring to find out that we had done the right thing. One person said to me, she said, "You came on to us so bold." I was like, bold? That's only if I was being admonished. I'm very proud of standing up to you guys and supporting my resident minister. I don't have any shame in that. So that was kind of it. So that was, it did feel good. A lot of people got very angry. Some old things were hashed out, and some people felt like, let's keep working towards this and try to find resolution. Basically, we can't get a new minister in there when we've got this. We don't have a big enough congregation to afford another minister. We can only barely afford one. And second, who are we going to bring into this chaos? Like, that would not be kind to anybody. We have a bad reputation. Yeah, we have a bad reputation for how we treat our minister there. So that's it. So that was interesting. And then I got home, I went shopping. And like I say, I feel pretty excited right now because I loaded up all of Stag's artwork in the back of the car, and I'm pretty darn excited about it. That's where I'm at.
Excellent.
Yeah. How about your day?
I'll tell you about a few of the things that I've been doing here in Hanoi.
Great.
I'm staying at the very west edge of the old quarter of Hanoi, and if you can imagine, the old quarter butts up against the Red River, a large river that runs north and south along the east side of the old quarter in Hanoi.
Okay.
So all the way across town and to the north, there's a bridge that was built in the very early.
Oops. Losing
1900s, you. Called okay. Long Bien Bridge.
Oh.
It's called Long Bien Bridge, and I wanted to cross it.
Yeah.
It's a bridge which right now has trains and motorbikes and pedestrians, but no cars. Oh. And it's a bridge that it really has been a symbol of the resilience of the Vietnamese people, because the Americans bombed the crap out of it during the war.
Right.
And it's still, they couldn't topple the bridge. They just kept repairing it.
Pretty cool.
And, And I read that in 2014, the government decided it was time to destroy the bridge, time to tear down the bridge. And the Hanoians said, no way, Jose. And they had a big outcry, and they're keeping their old broken bridge here in Hanoi. So it's a beautiful old bridge. It's somewhat scary to walk on. The pedestrian walkway is made up of slabs of 1.5 inches thick concrete that are about 2.5 feet wide by 1.5 feet long, mm-hmm. Placed edge by edge. And on the long sides, there's a little C cut out of each one to make sure you can look down through the concrete.
Okay, how reassuring.
Yes, and these pieces of concrete are suspended between a rail on each side, but there's nothing between the two rails.
Oh, God.
And many of the pieces of concrete, there's huge holes in them where chunks of them have fallen down into the river.
Wow.
So I was walking, holding on to the rusty handrail with one hand and trying to walk on the edge of the concrete with my feet so that I wouldn't put my weight right in the middle, because I'm a big guy. And the last thing I wanted to do was plunge through the Longbian Bridge into the Red River. It would make a spectacular end to a holiday, but maybe isn't the way I wanted to go out.
Yeah, that's true. No, I don't think so. And then, you know, of course, the final humiliation is that you would be videoed. You'd be filmed doing it.
Of course. I would be an internet sensation.
You'd finally be viral. You'd
finally It's right. It wouldn't be the coronavirus that would get me. It would be an Instagram virus.
Right. And you'd be famous. Yeah, wow. Okay.
So when you start walking onto the bridge, one of the first things you cross is the old dike that separates the city of Hanoi from the river, protects the city of Hanoi from flooding from the Red River. But of course, in typical Hanoi fashion, there's a whole neighborhood on the other side of the dike.
Oh, I was going to ask if it was a bridge to somewhere or a bridge to nowhere.
Oh, the bridge goes across to Longbian, and it was, when they built it, a really important way to get across the Red River and access to the coast.
All right. And is it now considered like an exercise? You just go there for exercise now?
Well, lots of commuters on their motorbikes cross the bridge every day. One of the people who works in the hotel lives across the bridge, and she zooms her Vespa across the bridge every day going to work.
That's so snazzy.
Oh, so the Vespas are great. I just love all the motorbikes, I tell you. I wish we had nice weather all year. I'd consider a motorbike.
Right.
Although, I don't know if in Toronto traffic I would want to do it. You'd have to have the pure chaos of Hanoi traffic to really enjoy the wonder of the motorbike.
Right.
So anyway, this dike, in 2010, Hanoi got the idea to create the world's longest mosaic wall on the dike, and it's over 6 kilometers long.
What?
Along the dike, and they got school groups and artists and all kinds of different groups to create this mosaic wall. When Sheila and I were here 2 years ago, we actually went down to the wall and walked along it for probably about 4 kilometers. It's really spectacular.
It's kind of fun to go to the same place you've traveled to before, I think, in my opinion. I like going back to a place.
Yes. So I got a great view from up on the bridge. And then later, after I had crossed the bridge and back, I was able to go down. And then you have to go across another footbridge over like a really, really busy road. And then I went down to the wall again and walked just a short distance along the wall. And then I walked through the little neighborhood on the other side of the dike. Which is really interesting. It's made up of mostly these narrow alleys, and it was kind of a damp, foggy morning, and everything was wet and dark, and it was, I don't want to say lovely, but there was a kind of unusual beauty about the neighborhood that I really liked, and I just loved crossing this bridge. As you're crossing it, you pass the dike, and then you cross a narrower section of of the river. That's like a lagoon, and it's all full of water hyacinth. And there were all kinds of white cranes or egrets flying around, and a number of fishing boats out there. And then you get to what I guess amounts to an island in the river, and there's stairs you can go down. But of course, in Hanoian fashion, the center of the stairs, they've added asphalt, so it's not stairs, it's a ramp, and they drive their motorbikes up and down this ramp, because you do that if you're in Hanoi. And down at the bottom, you can walk around under the bridge, and there's some areas down there that are farmed. Mm-hmm. It's really quite a cool spot.
Very nice.
And then when you walk a little further, you get to where the bridge spans the Red River itself, which is really quite huge. And it was a little bit foggy when I was there, and all the motorbikes were going across. Once you get in the middle, there's a lot of vibration on the bridge, and you're on these rickety concrete panels. It was quite exciting. I had a really great time there.
Oh, good. Good.
So that was one of the things that I did. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday, I had this idea that there must be Go players here in Hanoi.
Great.
So I know that in Vietnam, there isn't the level of interest in Go or Baduk or Wei Chi, the other mm-hmm. names, mm-hmm. As there is in Japan or Korea or China. But I was aware that there's some very strong players. So I looked on the web and I identified that there were, in fact, some Go clubs in town. But the useful parts of all their websites are in Vietnamese. So it was very difficult for me to figure out where and when they met. And I thought I identified that Sunday afternoon at one place they met. But it was really just so unclear. I went to see my hotel manager, and this guy can clearly do anything. He had no idea what Go was. I showed him a picture. I explained it to him. And he said, leave it with me. I went out for dinner. When I got back, he handed me a piece of paper with the address of a cafe. And some times. It was Tuesdays, Thursdays, and Saturday nights, 7 uh-huh. to 10, they met. Uh-huh. So this was Saturday evening. So I said, great, thank you very much. And I walked down there. It was about a 25-minute walk. Uh-huh. I found the address, and there is a little cafe there, but it's up a set of stairs. They can't have much business because you can hardly see that it's there. Mm. And it has a different name than the name of the cafe the guy gave me. So I went up the stairs, and I asked the
we're
the
getting
guy Bourget
the now. We're getting very Bourget.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
So I said, is this where people come to play Go? And clearly, this guy didn't understand a shred of English. So I tried repeating it two or three different ways. And then suddenly I heard from the back room, yes, yes.
Aww.
And this guy comes running out and says, welcome to our Go club.
Cool. That's awesome.
So I went back there. They were just getting started. They were very strong players, way stronger than me.
What?
I played two games. The first one, this guy gave me a 4-stone handicap. What?
Oh, God.
And wow, did he ever give me a Go lesson.
Really?
Yeah, I held my own for a while, but I made about 3 slack moves, and he took super advantage of each slack move that I made and turned the game around, and suddenly I had to resign. I had no chance of winning.
Oh, God.
So I played another guy who was only a little bit stronger than me, and he whooped me, too.
You're
but the really good
me.
Thing is this one really strong player reviewed both of our games. After we played them, he played back both games by memory.
Damn.
That's, I know. I just like show off. He could play the entire game back by memory, and he
was it like a lesson? Like,
he talked about, you know, what was good, what was bad, what alternatives. Yeah. Oh, yeah, absolutely. What alternatives? Like, what would have happened if I played this move instead of that move? And he showed me whole sequences. Mm-hmm. It was very fantastic. So one of the last things I'll be doing in Vietnam is Tuesday evening, I'll be going mm-hmm. back for
Excellent.
More medicine.
Excellent. Go take some more medicine. And can you record the lesson?
I don't know if that's appropriate to do.
Oh, okay. And also, I guess you are recording it by hearing it and playing again.
Yeah, I'll try to take some pictures. You know, yeah. I just took a couple of pictures of one of the games, but I'll try to take more pictures next time.
That's really, really awesome.
Yeah, it was quite overwhelming.
Oh, overwhelming.
And then yesterday, I walked to the Dong Suan Market, the northeast area of the old quarter, which is not far, actually, from the Long Bien Bridge, probably a 10-minute walk from there. And it's the largest market in Hanoi. It was built in the late 1800s, but in the, I think in the 1990s, at some point, I don't have the date, it burned down and they rebuilt it. It's, to give you a sense of the size, it's 10,000 square meters on three floors. And then it sprawls out to a street market that runs for blocks.
That was just so big, I couldn't even handle it. Wow.
Yeah, it's ridiculous big. And inside, it's aisles that are so close together, one person could basically just get through an aisle, and it's just sacked high with goods. So there's a wet market, fresh produce, there's a dry goods. I saw one area where there were sacks of cinnamon sticks. And you know, if you buy cinnamon sticks at your grocery store, the little sticks are like 2 inches long.
Yeah.
Well, imagine 3 feet long, the way they really are.
I did not see that. I saw a photo, I think, on Instagram. I did not realize the scale at all.
Yeah, so it's completely eye-opening. And then stacks of, like, sacks of 4 feet tall sacks of Whittier mushrooms and paddy mushrooms and dry shiitake mushrooms. Just super fantastic. Aisle after aisle of clothes and silks and souvenirs and utensils, kitchen stuff. It's like the craziest, biggest department store I've ever been in.
Wow. Wow. Listen, what does one do with a tree bark cinnamon 3-foot stick? What do you grind it or something in a commercial grinder?
Well, maybe. I don't know. I know people use pieces of that cinnamon and they'll drop it in soup stock.
Okay. But so it breaks easily?
Yeah, it'll break.
Or you get a hammer?
I think it scatters.
Okay.
But I don't know. I mean, do you just buy yourself a 3-foot long stick? I have no idea.
I would want to just to have it. It would smell up the whole apartment, your whole hotel room. That's pretty cool.
It's very cool. And everybody's selling everything. And, you know, you have to haggle. They expect you to haggle. And I have to tell you, I mean, I haggled. I like the game as much as the next guy. But I am not the hardest-nosed haggler in Hanoi, that's for sure. And, you know, I'm thinking, I'm doing okay. Nobody's getting rich if they manage to out-negotiate me by a dollar in Hanoi. So I don't try that hard.
So you lost your second game too, huh?
So I what?
You lost your second game.
Well, no, I think I won that one.
All right.
Tourism and that kind of thing really drives this economy here. It's a really big thing. And, you know, right now, tourism's down a little bit in Vietnam because of the coronavirus.
Right.
A lot of people are staying away. Now, you wouldn't know that if you went to, like, really, really busy areas at 9 o'clock at night. But I understand people are telling me that, it's usually a lot busier than it is now.
Wow. Okay.
So I'm doing my best to feed that economy while I'm here.
Good for you. Excellent.
Go ahead.
No, I have nothing. Go ahead.
I wanted to talk about, I've been eating a lot of amazing Vietnamese food. You've seen the pictures.
Yeah.
Every day I'm trying new things. So I wanted to talk about a few of the dishes that I've been trying, a couple of them anyway.
Good.
One of them is called cha ca, and cha ca is a fried fish dish. It's usually made with a kind of fish called snakehead, which is some sort of predatory freshwater fish. I guess it's like a pike. Not sure. And there's a very famous restaurant for cha ca, and they've named the street after the dish, Cha Ca Street. But I didn't go to that place. because the chef up at the Hanoi Cooking Center sent me to another place that he said is better.
Ooh.
So I went there. I didn't write down the name of the place, but if you check my blog, 27thstreet.me, mm-hmm. I have it up on there for anyone who's going to Hanoi and interested.
Great.
What happens is you have a burner at your table, and they bring a pan to your table with chunks of fish that's been already partially fried with turmeric. So it looks quite yellow.
Mm-hmm.
And when they get to your table, they fire up the burner and they add in tons of dill and spring onions. And they start to cook that together with the fish in this sauce it comes to you with. And also at your table, you have a bowl of noodles and you have some herbs and you have some fish sauce. So you put some noodles into your little bowl and then you put some of the fish and the dill and the spring onions into your bowl. And then you spoon over some of the fish sauce on top of it, add a little hot sauce if you like that. man, it is so good. It's delicate and really quite unusual with the dill flavor. Compared to anything else I've had here in Vietnam.
Sounds good.
So really a treat. And if you visit Hanoi, I strongly recommend trying Chua Kha.
Mm-hmm. I think next time you go to Hanoi, I have to eat before we do our podcasts.
the other one I wanted to talk about is a very, very popular dish. It's all over the place here. It's called Bun Ba Nam Bo.
Well done.
Well, bun is vermicelli noodles, mm-hmm. and ba is beef. Mm-hmm. So bun ba is noodles and beef, and nam bo, I think, means from the south.
Okay.
So it's Vietnamese southern style beef and noodle salad.
Good.
And I went to a place that was recommended on a really good blog about traveling in Vietnam called Rusty Compass. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's traveling to Vietnam, I strongly recommend Rusty Compass.
Mm-hmm.
The guy has unbiased, unpaid-for, independent reviews of all kinds of things in Vietnam, including a few Vietnamese language lessons. So highly recommend it. It's really excellent. And I went to this place that, it's the same name. It's called Bun Ba Nam Bo.
Mm-hmm.
At the front of the place, there's like an assembly station and a wok station. So they set up bowls with noodles and herbs and salad greens. And then they stir fry the meat in the wok, and then they add it to the bowls. And so it's very, very quick to get your food. They have a couple other things on the menu, but everybody goes there for the Bun Ba Nam Bo. So I sat down, asked for Bun Ba Nam Bo at a beer, and mm-hmm. within about 15 seconds, it arrived. It was crazy. Because they just like quickly assemble it, right?
Yeah.
This is a bricks and mortar indoor joint. There's a saying here that says, if there's a door, you pay more. which is true, but you know, every now and then, it's nice to have a comfortable spot to sit down.
Like a normal height chair for you.
Yes.
A table.
And this place has all that. So, you could get your the same dish on the street for maybe two-thirds of the price.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worth a little bit extra. It's beautifully done. It's probably the best place for this dish in the city. Again, highly recommended.
Nice.
And the third absolutely must-eat dish in Hanoi is called Bun Cha, and it's a Hanoi favorite. I may have mentioned it.
Mm. Oops, lost you.
Previous broadcast.
Okay.
It's the one that was featured on Anthony Bourdain's show.
Oh yeah.
Where he and Obama had and that's a deconstructed noodle and pork dish.
Okay.
So you've got your pork dish, your beef dish, and you got your fish dish. And if you eat nothing else in Hanoi, those three as well as pho, the pho ba, which
right.
is your beef noodle soup, and pho ga, which is your chicken noodle soup. Also is what they're obviously famous around the world for. And it's fabulous everywhere. There's no such thing as bad pho in Hanoi. It's just how good it is, you know.
Cool.
And of course, in Hanoi, I mean, Hanoi is the king of the knockoffs. It's the knockoff capital of the universe in the history of ever.
Oh.
So, everybody, you see all these guys on their motorbikes wearing their North Face jackets.
Right.
Now, there's a place that's reputed to have the best pho in Hanoi, and it's called Pho Tin. That's T-H-I-N, but pronounced Tin.
Mm-hmm.
Well, another place opened up that's Pho, and then the number 10. So it's Pho 10. So it's apparently also, well, I've eaten at both of them. They're both excellent.
Okay.
One of the best, highly recommended soup joints in town. So you could, I guess this place opened up because, you know, people talk about Pho 10, and then if they see Pho 10, they think they've got the same place.
Right. Yeah, so they're benefiting. Smart.
It's pretty funny, but both places are really excellent. I would highly recommend either of them. The style is slightly different in the two. The broth is a little bit different, and the meat has a different flavor. At Pho Tin, the meat is smokier, and at Pho 10, the broth is clearer. So they're a little bit different.
Hmm. All right, good explorations.
Today, I'm going to try something a little bit different. I'm going to go to a place called for lunch, once we finish this podcast, called the Hanoi Social Club.
Ooh, I like the name.
It's a great name. It's been around, I think, for about 20 years. And it was opened by a couple, one of whom is Vietnamese and the other who is Australian from Melbourne.
Oh.
And it's a Melbourne-style cafe. So I think I'm going to go and get me a burger.
I think that's great.
Like Western food.
Oh, that's
fun. With the
fun.
Exception of this amazing Danish I had this morning. Oh, my God. Aside from that, I haven't had any Western food in 2 weeks.
What a great idea. I heard Melbourne was, like, amazing for food. Just amazing.
I've heard that as well.
Yeah.
And this place comes highly recommended. And it's really popular among vegetarians and vegans because they have a good selection of vegetarian and vegan food. Although you can get vegetarian food all around Hanoi, you have to look for it because if it isn't specifically in a vegetarian place, if you order a vegetable dish, that just means it's mostly vegetables mixed in with the meat.
Okay.
Right?
Yeah.
And for sure that if they use stock, well, you know that broth is going to be a beef stock.
Right.
Even if it's vegetables. And you know that it's got fish sauce.
Yep.
So you have, to look. Well, fish sauce is in almost everything here. Fish sauce is the heart of the cuisine in this town.
Do you want to know that right now I just got a notification that you've tweeted a photo? But that must be on delay.
I haven't tweeted a photo. Well, I did. I did do a blog post a short while ago, and there would be a tweet that auto goes out.
That must be it then right before we got together. That's hilarious. So I'm like, what are you can talk and tweet at the same time? I'm impressed.
No, I did it before. I did it while I was still in the hotel room.
Okay. Great.
So are you all ready for your conference now?
Yes. Now I have not timed my paper yet. I was going to read it last night when the girls were here and I completely forgot. I also felt really nervous about reading it for them when they got here, and then I just forgot. So I probably unconsciously sabotaged myself there. But yeah, I think I'm ready. I can probably cut out a couple of words here and there if I have to. I'll time myself once I get to New Mexico, I guess.
Yes.
My
recommendation is if you're going to be presenting, then go in front of a mirror and deliver your paper 3 or 4 times in front of the mirror.
I know. I don't think I could do that. I think I'd give up. I think I'd feel futile.
It's so helpful.
Okay, I'll do that.
By the second time, you're already going to feel more confident. You're going to know what, when you hear yourself do it out loud, you're going to know what works better and what isn't, and you're going to edit on the fly. By the time you do it 3 or 4 times, you're going to be delivering with a huge amount of confidence. And the big thing is, your audience is going to hear that.
All right. I'll do it. I don't want to, but I'll do it. All right. You know, often I have read them over and over again to Stag till he's sick of them, or to my friend Tricia. And I just haven't, I've only read it out once loud to Stag. And of course, while I'm reading that, I had 5,000 mistakes and I had to fix those. You know what I wanted to add was when we talked about the Higgs book last week about Stranger Than We Can Imagine, the 20th century book, I wanted to say that my favorite part was the part that got us into the book in the first place, was the idea, the theory that a woman, Baroness Elsa von Freytag Lorenhoven, do you like that? Did I do a good job? Created the fountain, ready-made by Marcel Duchamp. That was still, I think, the strongest part of the book for me.
It was very, very interesting because in the fullness of time, in mass culture, we remember Duchamp, but we don't remember the Baroness. But at the time, I mean, she was a highlight of the scene.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
They all knew her, and it was happening.
I know.
And, you know, I like the idea that if Duchamp took the urinal that she sent him and then exhibited it, making it secondhand again made it even more interesting to me.
That's I agree. I totally agree. And I want a movie about her.
Oh, that would be a great movie, wouldn't it?
I think so.
Because
for
it could have Duchamp and Man
Ray. Yes, yes.
All those people around. You know, the descriptions of her, she sounds like she's really quite wild and flamboyant.
Right, exactly. And you'd have Europe and New York City. So it'd be fantastic.
Yep.
Something else in that book, he had the chapter about stories. Maybe it was science fiction. And he said how Star Wars, everyone knows that George Lucas took the motif of Joseph Campbell and the hero's journey. And then he said, well, Joseph Campbell was wrong, that there wasn't just that main story, that there were other stories, and we've got The Wire. We have all kinds of other adaptations that are very complex stories. And it reminded me, and you and I may have talked about this over the time, but I wonder, did you know there's the idea of seven stories? Not one story, well, but seven stories.
Well, yeah. I don't concern myself with that a lot. And I'll tell you why. As somebody who likes to write stories, I'm happy to let somebody else decide what category they want to stick them in. I'm not about the categorization.
Yeah,
I'm about the story.
Yeah, I don't think writers use that. I think analysis uses that.
Yes. And so for me, it just isn't that. It isn't so interesting as it is to critics.
Right. Well, and you know, critics, we're critics sometimes too. I wanted to read out what those seven stories were.
All right, go for it.
Most notably, author Christopher Booker created it, believe that there are only seven basic plot structures in all of storytelling, frameworks that are recycled again and again in fiction, but populated by different settings, characters, and conflicts. These seven plots are overcoming the monster, rags to riches, the quest, voyage and return, rebirth, comedy, and tragedy. This list comes from Booker's seminal book, The Seven Basic Plots, Why We Tell Stories. It took him 34 years of research and reading to complete the 700-page psychoanalytic tome. But where did the idea of a limited number of stories come from? Is it true? If so, how does that affect writers? Obviously not that much right around this room. So I thought that was really funny to think of when he didn't mention that. He just mentioned that it wasn't one story, the hero's journey. However, I think the hero's journey is still huge.
Well, sure. But from my perspective, it may be so. It may be so there are seven stories, but that just takes the piss out of everything. Right? So let's just not worry about that. And let's try to write whatever story we want, and let's not worry about how it's going to fit in, which story it is. I'm not too concerned about that. I think that we can, it's good to tell stories about the world that we live in. And if I only tell one story over and over again, only one of those seven stories, why should it matter?
Right.
Or as weird old Bob Dylan said, you could have a song with one note. Who cares?
Yeah.
Right. I just think it takes the piss.
I guess it can. I guess it could seem that way in some ways. Now, the one thing I like is I love Arn Thompson's Uther Index. And that's a story that's an index that categorizes all the folk tales around the world. And I guess it's a little bit like, what's the famous folk guy that categorized all the folk songs? He recorded them all.
Oh, Harry Smith.
Is it Harry Smith?
Are you thinking of Harry Smith? He put out his anthology with like three or four record set from his own personal collection.
Okay.
And Harry Smith, we should do an episode on Harry Smith.
All right.
Because, I mean, what a fantastic guy. Not only did he have this amazing record collection, not only so much of the folk music that has been heard throughout the 60s during the great folk music scare, where did young folk musicians hear it? From the Harry Smith anthology.
That's which true.
Came from this eccentric guy's personal collection. He lived in the Chelsea Hotel, where he made experimental films in which he painted on individual frames of the film. Really,
nice.
Really fascinating guy.
Super fascinating.
Very, very interesting. And if you read Patti Smith's first book.
Yes, I did.
She talks about hanging out with Harry Smith.
I totally must have missed that or didn't stick with me, but I did read that book. I was more concerned with the cowboy. Okay, well then I think this is kind of interesting because this is pretty cool, but it does sort of fit with his anthology. So I'm just going to get this off of a website of Wikipedia, okay? The Arn Thompson Uther Index is a catalog of folktale types used in folklore studies. The ATU Index is the product of a series of revisions and expansions by an international group of scholars. Originally composed in Germany by Finnish folklorist Aritti Arn in 1910, the index was translated into English, revised, and expanded by American folklorist Stith Thompson in 1928 and 1961, and later further revised by and expanded by German folklorist Hans Urg Uther. Along with Thompson's Motif Index of Folk Literature in 1932, with which it is used in tandem, the ATU Index is an essential tool for folklorists. So sometimes I use it when I'm looking up a story and I want to find out what kind of story it is. Now, they have a lot of stories. They don't have seven stories. They have dozens and dozens, and they've collected them around the world. It's really amazing. So they have ones like The Boy Steals Ogre's Treasure, The Smith and the Devil. I love those horns. The Animal Bride Equals the Three Feathers, The Poor Miller's Boy and the Cat, The Grateful Animals, The White Snake, The Queen Bee. 10 more magic tales are found to be current throughout the Western branch of the Indo-European languages, comprising the main European language families derived from the Baltic, Slavic, Germanic, and Italo-Celtic. Other names of stories are Rescue by Sister, Godfather, Death, Beauty and the Beast, Friends in Life and Death, The Name of the Supernatural Helper, that would be like a Rumpelstiltskin, The Grateful Dead, The Clever Horse, Ferdinand and the Faithful, and Ferdinand the Unfaithful, and The Dance Among Thorns. So it goes on and on. There's like The Strong Boy, The Moon Kidnaps the Woman. It's really cool and very, very useful.
Later, after I get back home to Canada, and you get back from Albuquerque.
Yes.
You could tell me where the Lazy Ellen stories fit into the story index.
I will. I will try to do that. All right. I can tell in a few minutes.
Oh, I know.
I should be able to do it right now, but
I'll probably never write another story once.
No, that's crazy. Wouldn't you still paint a circle? If somebody said it was a sun or a vagina, you'd still paint it.
You know, I was working on a painting once. This is back in my old Niagara Street studio. It was a huge three-panel painting, and I guess you would call it an abstract painting. And Sheila walked into the studio, looked at one area of it, and said, "That looks like the Queen." All I could see was the goddamn queen after that.
Right.
I had to paint over it.
Yeah. I saw when you were painting one time, I kept seeing Wonder Woman, and I think I mentioned it. Scott, I've seen it that one time he decorated a table, and I was like, well, that looks like a penis. His wife was like, yeah, I see a penis. He's like, oh, my God. And I had a friend, Gidget, she made one painting in her life, and I basically ruined it because I came over, and I went, oh, wow, look, at there's like a vagina there and some penises there, and that, and she was so horrified. Because if someone's not painting on a regular basis and you see that come out, you're kind of stunned by it, right? If you are painting all the time and making artwork, you get kind of used to your unconsciousness doing funny things like that, I think.
Well, yeah, of course. And you're open to it.
Yeah, you're open to it, or you paint over it or something. Yeah. It's part of the adventure. Getting rid of those, hiding those stories. That's what you kind of want to do, is you want to hide those things, which I think is what we were kind of getting at. I like it when it's very challenging.
Something's going on here. I'm not sure just what.
Okay.
Somebody's backed a car up in front of the cafe, and the cafe guy has folded up some of the chairs that are facing the street. There's no one else in the cafe now. I don't know what the heck's going on. I think I do know what's going on. I think it has to do with a coronavirus messaging session or something.
A what? Pardon?
Yeah, I see. There's a truck that's pulled up, and it's got some coronavirus stuff.
God, is it like a vaccine or something?
I don't know. I think it's just an information kind of thing.
Oh, my God. Wow.
So I may have to finish up here soon.
All right. Well, that's okay. I mean, do you have anything you want to add to today? I want to do a shout out to a friend of mine, Ben, who is doing a podcast called Uptown Community Podcast. And you can find him on iTunes and check him out. He's just talking about the neighborhood.
Excellent. Please add a link to it.
I will.
Or on our Facebook site. That would
I will
be great.
For sure.
Try to get back. I'd like to check it out.
Yeah.
All right. I don't have anything else really. I've given you my adventures, and that's great. All I've been doing is wandering around the town.
I know.
So I wish you all the best with your paper.
Thank you.
Keep in touch while you're down there, and we'll do a podcast.
We'll do a podcast Thursday or Friday. Well, it's going to be a little crossover. We'll just have to text and figure it out.
Thursday. Well, I'll get home Thursday night. Friday, I'll be a wreck, but maybe I could talk.
All right. Saturday or Sunday. Not a big deal.
Okay.
Okay, great.
Sounds great.
Thank you.
Okay, bye, listeners. Thank you for tuning
listeners.
In. We love you all.
Thank you. And thanks, Dave, for Wages of Fear. I'm glad you liked it, and I'm glad that we saw one of your movies. Take care, everybody. Email us, theagency.podcast@gmail.com.
Bye, everybody.
Bye. Bye.